5:30. See BartlesvilleSymphony.org for more information and tickets.
And you just heard him in a recorded version, but sitting over the other microphone, the man who is the official ear, certainly the conductor and leader of the Bartlesville Symphony, Lauren Green. Thanks for so much for coming in.
Hi, good morning. Good to be here.
You get the best seat in the house.
I think I do, actually. Now, sometimes, you know, it's interesting because the sound in the seats is a little bit different than where I am. And sometimes, actually, you know, I'll say, flute or somebody, I can't quite hear you, but out in the audience I can. Nevertheless, it is the best seat in the house because I'm right in the middle of it and I get to experience it.
And I think there's something about just the emotion of having the baton and the feeling that you project as you're leading the orchestra.
I've thought about that a lot. That a lot of people view being a conductor as just sort of dancing with the music, and there's an aspect of that. I'll tell you the truth, that you get to actually physically respond to what you're hearing. It's this funny two-way street because you're also controlling it a little bit.
Yeah, you're roughly a half beat ahead just because of their strength.
Yeah, and the mind is going in a different direction, so you're not just, having a good time, but at the same time, you do get that privilege, rather than sitting in the seat and maybe daring to tap your toe a little bit. I get to move my arms and I get to move my body and I get to, when it's loud, I get to get really excited and that's great.
Yeah.
But it's also great to control it too, and most conductors have a control complex as well.
I'm not going there. You got a wonderful program for us. Again, that, like you said, the three Bs, it's wonderful.
It's, it's funny, that's sort of what's the saying? I don't know. It's just a saying that's been around for a century, the three Bs. And it was actually apparently coined by some music critic back in the 1800s who said, the three people at the pinnacle of the composers were Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms. And that's sort of arbitrary in a way because that leaves out Mozart.
I'm going to say you're wrong, but you left out a whole, only three.
Yeah, the three M's, Mozart, Mendelssohn, and Meyerbeer or something.
I'd say Mussorgsky, but either way.
There you go. Okay. it is arbitrary, but yet it's
I don't know what you're doing the P's after Palestrina, but anyway. Yeah.
Well, Prokofiev.
There you go.
Okay, let's take the next 20 minutes. Play musical games here. Yeah. It's sort of the way we couch this concert to give the idea that this is a strictly classical concert. It's sort of what a symphony is all about, to perform standard repertoire music from the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, maybe the 20th century as well. And, just the solid stuff that people associate with being a symphony. And you can't get more much than that than Bach and Beethoven and Brahms. Beethoven and Brahms for sure.
Yeah.
So that's where we went.
An arranged Bach, it's not the original composition.
No, that's right. The thing is, and I don't know whether this is a confession or I'm bragging, but we have rarely done this. We've rarely had a concert that falls into the sort of a standard symphony format of an overture type piece, followed by a concerto, followed by a symphony. Mm-hmm. Over all these decades, I've sort of consciously tried to avoid that and find new ways to package older material and to present it in interesting and innovative connections and combinations. But I thought, let's just be innovative and do it the old-fashioned way and do an opener piece by Bach, a concerto by Beethoven, and a symphony by Brahms. So in a way, being old-fashioned is being innovative.
Well, and also, I guess, going back to meeting expectations, that's the generic, you don't do it, and your patrons know that, but it is still the common expectation of a symphony orchestra concert.
We always say we try to have a little something for everybody, and you don't want to be so innovative and out there that you're forgetting the core of what you're all about. And I think a little bit of all of that is good. And so this is where we're trying to sort of balance things and to bring in a wonderful piano soloist to do Beethoven and then to dig into a 50-minute work like the Brahms Second. Mm-hmm. It's only been done twice in Bartlesville Symphony's history that I can tell. One in the early 60s when the orchestra was brand new. And I dare say they must have had quite a challenge with that piece, being a happy group of volunteers, local volunteers. And then we did it in the 1990s under my direction. And so this is nearly, I think, the third time. So
and it's out of the Brahms symphonies. Yes, it's performed, but there are others that I think are performed more.
Probably the five, or the three.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, Brahms wrote four, and it's the first that sometimes gets performed a lot. Yeah. It has a beautiful melody. It's very, and the second probably. Yeah. Each of the Brahms symphonies has their own sort of trademark and characterization. I think the three is probably the least performed, simply because it is more Brahms in his thoughtful mode.
Yeah.
And his the word autumnal is often associated with the third symphony, that is sort of in his waning years. Yet he was still going to write another one, which is powerful. But the second was interesting because Brahms had some psychological things he was working with. We're talking here in the mid-1800s. He wanted to write a symphony as a young conductor. He sort of tried, but turned it into a piano concerto. Mm-hmm. The piano concerto flopped, at least in the initial performances. And he got so freaked out and so psyched out that he didn't try to write a symphony for another 15 years. So it wasn't until he was in his his 40s, that he tried to write a symphony. It went very well. So within the next year, he wrote a second symphony, and it went very well.
Yeah.
And of course, now we know Brahms is one of the great composers of that century. So anyway, it's a challenge for the players, but at the same time, it's one of those things where, you can be eating all these wonderful tapas and interesting small tidbits, but finally you get this wonderful prime rib, and you can just dig into it solid stuff.
I won't say breaking ground, but he advanced the idea of dissonance and consonance quite a bit in the two and three.
Brahms, yes. Brahms was interesting because he straddles the classical era of Beethoven and Mozart with the Romantic era of the late 1800s. And he's considered a Romantic composer because he expanded things. He took longer to say them. He explores new musical material. Yet at the same time, he works within standard formats of a symphony that has four movements. And he's a pretty regular guy in that regard.
Yeah.
And so he pushed him a little bit. And he left it to people that came along 20 years later or so, like Mahler and Richard Strauss, to really just push the limits of romanticism. Yeah. So that's going to be fun. In the first half, you mentioned we start with Bach. Bach's interesting because he's just the opposite. A century and a half earlier, almost two centuries earlier, they didn't have symphony orchestras.
No.
They had small little groups, if anything, of players. Most music was either solo or with a small group of strings and the occasional wind. They didn't have symphonies like Brahms' Second Symphony. There was not a Bach symphony.
Symphonia would be the...
Yeah, that would be the closest, and it would be suites of dances and so forth. What I did was to try to find a middle ground. And there was an English composer named William Walton who in the 1940s took Bach's music and used it for a ballet.
Yeah.
And of all things. And he just took odds and ends of pieces that Bach wrote. Some of them were choral pieces from cantatas, and some of them were instrumental.
Bach had to produce one a week.
Bach worked at a church for much of his life. Yeah, so he wrote a cantata per week for Sunday morning. And then there were other times of his life when he worked for some royalty and so forth. But Walton turned this music into symphonic music for a modern symphony orchestra. And so that's what we'll open with for this concert. So again, it's sort of the best of both worlds. You get the Baroque fun of Bach and the beautiful melodies and the fun rhythms, but with a full symphony orchestra and all the colors that it produces. And so that's sort of a short opener, about 10 minutes, but it'll provide a nice bouncing off point.
Well, and I think Walton must have had fun with it because yes, there were wind instruments in the orchestras at the time, but primarily Bach wrote much more for string or for the organ as a solo instrument to accompany a voice.
Right, exactly. And so I think Walton had this in mind when he did this. Walton's an interesting composer, and I wish we could do more of his music. He's very... Some of his music's extremely difficult to play, and so probably you don't hear a lot of it with community-type orchestras for that reason. He straddled two worlds, too. He straddled the world of, and we're talking mid-20th century here in Britain, he straddled the world of British pomp and circumstance sort of music. Mm-hmm. That you hear it and you just say, that's British and that's royalty and everything associated with it. But then he also had his foot in the very modern classical type of writing where it's difficult to listen to.
We were pushing 12-tone and everything else.
Yeah. So he was fun that he wasn't highly trained, but he adapted all these different styles in his music. And so that sort of shows through with his using Bach.
Yeah.
For this ballet. The ballet that has nothing to do really with the music per se or why we're doing it. It's called The Wise Virgins, and it's based, the ballet was apparently about the biblical parable of Jesus, which ironically was in the lectionary this very last Sunday in our church, about there was the wise virgins and the unwise virgins, and some were rewarded and some got left out in the cold.
Yeah.
And because they didn't prepare. So that has nothing to do with what we're doing. But we're highly prepared. Yes, we're all very wise. We won't go to the other direction, the other part of that. But never mind. Then in the middle, we do this Beethoven concerto. And Beethoven, you know, I mean, everybody knows the name Beethoven. And they usually know the four notes that he wrote, the G and E flat notes. And that started off the Fifth Symphony. But, you know, he wrote a ton of music. And he was a troubled soul, too. And he, even at a young age, he wasn't really, hadn't really found himself. He was known as a pianist. He was a virtuoso pianist at a very young age and moved to Vienna in his 20s to make a star of himself. But the way most pianists best made a star of themselves was to write music for themselves that would show off their abilities. But even more than that, Beethoven just wanted to be a composer. He didn't want to be this frou-frou piano player. He wanted to be a, you know, he wanted to express himself through his writing. So he tried to kill two birds with one stone and wrote himself a piano concerto when he was 14 years old. And we don't really know much about that piece. Then he wrote another concerto for himself a few years later. This a concerto is a piece for solo instrument and orchestra. So it features the piano and the orchestra backs them up. Then he wrote a third concerto. Ironically, that's the piano concerto number one, and that's the one we're playing this week.
Things get numbered strangely sometimes.
They do. A lot depends.
Did Dvorak do 5 or 9?
You know? Yes. It depends on a lot of things. It depends how it's cataloged. It depends who assigns the opus numbers. In this case, it depended on when it got published.
Yeah.
And so he wrote his first piano concerto, then he wrote a second piano concerto, but they didn't get published until 1801, and the second one happened to get published before the first one, so it got the name of number one. And that's the one we're doing with Sarah Davis Buchner, who is a marvelous pianist, internationally known, Canada, the Orient, Europe, won many competitions. And we're real fortunate to have her coming here this weekend. And so we're looking forward to that collaboration.
I think the soloists that you bring in, I think, are always of note because you've chosen them for various reasons, but you build the program frequently around them and what they bring to you.
Yes, and that's really what happened. Sarah and I have been trying to get together for years now. You know, when we said, well, what shall we do? Finally, when it came to happen, you know, I just sort of, it all sort of came together to do a solid sort of Beethoven concerto, not something that was out there or unusual, but to really display her virtuosity with a real virtuoso piece like a Beethoven concerto. So looking forward to that. It's going to be a fun collaboration. I'm told, I've never met her in person, but that she is just funny and very engaging and a wonderful performer on stage.
What a switch, though, from Wichita and Lineman and the time I get to Phoenix. You know,
and that's what makes the Bartlesville Symphony so interesting, that people say, oh, symphony, that's not my thing. But you compare just what we did in October to what we're doing in November, from the songwriter like Jimmy Webb, who wrote some of those great hits in the 60s, 70s, and beyond, now to some of these great hits from the 1800s.
Yeah.
For symphony, and it's a little something for everybody.
It really is, and we could go on into your season, but we're talking about this Saturday night's concert, and again, we're three pieces, not a lengthy program in count, but certainly, like you said, when you get that 50-minute symphony in the second half.
It's substantial, and if people were getting paid by the note, we'd have a lot of rich players. So I do want to mention that before we go on to anything else, is that the concert is sponsored by Susan Dick Financial Services, and we're so grateful to them for their ongoing support to the symphony, and also by Pam and Paul Crawford, who are longtime symphony supporters too. The symphony, you know, as we often say, doesn't pay its bills through ticket sales. Mm-hmm. We have to have ticket sales. We have to have people listening to us. But ultimately, it's the donors of the companies and the people in town who really keep us going.
Well, and I mean, that's a tradition going back as far as you want to look at history. That,
of course.
You know, that everybody or nearly all of the composers had a patron or someone that they worked for that paid the bills.
Yes, exactly. And so we are so pleased that people here in town find what we do meaningful, find what we do to that it supports our community, that it adds something to what our standard of living here in Bartlesville is. And it's not a matter of whether they like Beethoven or whether they like Jimmy Webb more than it's just because we are here and we are doing our thing and we are adding to what makes Bartlesville great.
And truly a community symphony. Yes, you have some that drive in from out of town, but the vast majority have worked here.
We have maintained that community spirit. We do have a mix of local volunteers, regional volunteers, paid professionals, both locally and from elsewhere, in Tulsa primarily. So it's a really sort of a hybrid mix, which is very unusual in a way. Usually you're either one or the other. You're just a bunch of volunteers or you're just a bunch of professionals in there earning a paycheck. Our professionals love our orchestra. They come back every time. And then, of course, our local players, you've got to give them something that makes them want to come back. If they're beaten down or playing music that they can't handle or don't like, they won't come back. So it's a two-sided coin. And so we've walked this tightrope over the years, I think, very successfully. And in the process, given audiences something that they find worth paying money to come to hear. And so that's really win-win all around.
Yeah. So four B's for the price of three.
That there you go. And so, yeah, it'll be a great evening, and we're really looking forward to it. As usual, on the evening, we'll have a time with the conductor beforehand called Upbeat with Lauren, and I'm sure that Sarah will be part of that. I would almost guarantee it, being told how much she apparently likes to talk and tell stories. So it's always fun when we have a soloist there that I can sort of ask some leading questions and find out all sorts of behind-the-scenes stuff about the music and their background and their experience. It's a lot nicer than mm-hmm. just watching them up on stage doing their thing. And that happens at 6:30 before the 7:30 performance.
And it's an opportunity, I think, for the audience to actually see that individual as a real human being opposed to, like you said, the person who walks out, gets applause, performs outstanding, gets another applause, and walks off and they go home.
Right, exactly. You find that they're real individuals with interesting careers and interesting things to say, and you sit there 5 feet away from them and ask them questions, and so it's really a fun time before the concert. And we try to do that every time. Not always can we get the soloist to come in. Some soloists are, for whatever reason, they either have a lot of clothes to put on or they just want to be by themselves or something. You know, it doesn't always work. But usually we try to engage soloists who have an interest beyond what they do on stage. And that includes going into the schools, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And Sarah will be doing that on Friday morning, meeting with students and talking about career and playing and who knows what else. And you know, we make an effort to find those well-rounded individuals that can come and appreciate what Bartlesville has so we can appreciate what they have.
Yeah. So again, I think you've got an opportunity for some. You have a dining opportunity part of the concert too this time?
No.
Sometimes you do.
No.
Okay, well, we'll get that in. But
6:30 for the pre-concert and then 7:30 for the concert. And I believe there's a little reception afterwards usually. Yeah. And where usually the soloist is there as well, and have some cookies and say hi to the orchestra.
Sounds like a great deal.
Yeah.
And then you're back for a whole spring second half of the concert season.
Yes. We come back after this one. We have a little break, and we come back in February with our Valentine's concert on February 10th, featuring a singer from Florida, Tiffany Coburn, who sings at Epcot and sings with a group you see on YouTube a lot called Voctive. And do wonderful a cappella tight harmony stuff. She's going to be wonderful singing some Valentine songs. This concert will be sort of a mix. It usually is a mix of some classical, some pops, some movie music, but all around the Valentine's love theme. And I think it'll be a great show. In March, we have our gala concert celebrating our 60th anniversary. That'll be lots of fun because we'll have soloists, various soloists. We'll have our young artist soloists as well. We'll be giving out some awards. We'll be reviewing some of the history, playing some memorable pieces. It'll be fun.
Sounds like a great deal. So set your concert season, but start it Saturday night. Bartlesville Community
Hope
Center.
Hope to see you there.
All right. Yeah, it's going
to
be a great show with LA. I'll say it again. 4 beers for the price of 3. So head on out there, and you're going to have a great time. Lauren, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Always a pleasure.
It's going to be fun. Thank you very much. More on AM 1400 coming up in just a bit.
It's now time for the Outdoor Showcase. Here's your host, Greg Merritt.